Welcome to Electric Lawn Talk. Each week, the electric lawn care professionals get together to talk about the electric lawn and landscape business and have some fun along the way. Whether you are in the business, thinking of getting started, or just want to hear the tips, tricks, struggles, and victories of the move to electric, you are in the right place. Let's get started.
We were talking about technology. We've all been at this for, I don't know, some of us 3, 4, 5, 6 years. And technology has moved so fast in such a short period of time. We were talking about this before we came on. Sean, I'm curious your thoughts about, now that we've gone through the trials and tribulations of all this stuff, everything's easier now. All the batteries are better. The equipment's better. The technology's better. So now when all the gasser guys step into the game here with electric, how easy is it going to be for them to see how far along the technology has come?
Oh man, I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see that transition with more of the more traditional lawn care guys stepping into the electric side of things. There's definitely a lot of stuff that we've all problem solved and troubleshot along the way and learned how to charge on the go. Unless they're prepared to buy, an endless supply of batteries or go back and listen to all their old episodes to figure out how to create on the go charging. I think it's definitely still going to be a tricky transition for some of the good old boys on what they're used to. But it'll be a lot easier than what we went through in our first seasons for sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think, and also Sandy was talking about a new Greenworks machine, a stander that you guys have picked up and how the controls work with it. I was asking whether or not it drove like a dingo, because that's what I'm used to using a dingo in a zero turn. You said it's got two joysticks. Tell us how that's working out.
Yeah. I mean, so it's got its traditional controls like a zero turn, right? So it's got two handles. You push down in and then you either move forward, backwards, or, to make your turns. But comparing that to the 48 inch, the ZC 48 that I have that I bought in 21, man, this thing is as smooth as butter. I have to make little to no effort to allow the mower to move. So it's very smooth. It's very, very effortless, I guess is another good word compared to the 48 that I have. So I think they've done a lot to allow the machine to be more responsive and, not having to worry about, burning up lawns because it's spinning too fast or anything like that. It actually has traction control, surprisingly. So it kind of helps you prevent from slippage or when you're doing a K turn from turning up the turf. So I think
traction
control,
that's like, yeah, that's cheating.
Traction control. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But
next you're going to tell me you just put your Oculus on and you drive it from your living room.
Hey, you never know. That could be around the corner. You need someone to develop it.
I think Toro is already on that.
You know what? That's cool, because, and my question for you is, having not used a stander, how does it compare as far as like the ease of operation with, against a zero turn? Can you get more done in less time? And is it more manageable and lighter to move around? Tell me a little bit more.
So, and I'm assuming that question was for me again. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure.
Yeah. It's totally for you, man.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. So right now my situation is that I use the 48 for all my non-fenced yards. Most of my yards tend to be from, 4,000 to up to 6,000 square feet. So not very big. So a couple passes and I'll be done with the 48. So, and then I had a couple yards that I had to push mill because obviously I couldn't fit the fence, the 48 through the fences. So bringing in the 36, so far I haven't found a fence that I can't fit through.
That's great, man.
Yeah. So it's, and I'll give you an example. So there's one yard in particular that would take me about 47 minutes to do from start to finish.
And 47.
Able, 47 minutes. Yeah. Today.
Yeah. Okay.
I was able to finish it in 26 minutes, which was awesome. I'm talking about done.
Wow. Like,
packed everything up.
Oh my.
Yeah. And it's crazy because, again, going back to the advancements in how you maneuver this machine, like my 48 only had two speeds, slow and really fast. And the really fast was dangerously dangerous. It's hard to operate, like going through tight spaces. So I would never be able to be comfortable unless I'm in an open field running that at its top speed. So with this machine, you have several different options to be able to speed it up. So I ran it, you know, at an average of 5 miles an hour, and it was fast and I can get through things and I didn't feel like I was going to run into anything, which was great. Yeah. So it really gives you more control on how fast you can move compared to the older machines where you only had two speeds. Uh-huh. So I think overall way smoother. And you don't feel like you're driving a tank that's going to take out a wall.
That is awesome. What about the learning curve? How long did it take you to just get used to the controls?
So the moving forward, perfect. So sure, moving forward in any direction.
Just like when did you? Yeah. When did you begin to feel comfortable on it?
I would say almost immediately. But I will say though, okay, that the reverse on it is kind of dangerous. I'm not sure if it's, you know, if there's some sort of update that's going to have to happen to this at some point, but for some reason, the mower is smart enough that when you're off the platform, it reduces the speed to, you know, as slow as possible. It assumes that someone either needs to get through a tight spot or they need to load it and unload it from a trailer. So they figured that out. But for some reason, when I'm off the platform and I'm reversing, it doesn't go slow. It goes like full speed. Like I'm talking about as fast as this thing can go. And I learned that the hard way, and almost ran into a big issue with the mower because I use a ramp rack. So, it's a dovetail.
That's pretty steep. And
I have a 2500, so it is pretty steep. And I got stuck, literally stuck, because I forgot that this thing goes full speed on reverse, and immediately it just jackknifed and it was stuck on the deck was stuck on the ramp. And, you know, luckily I had access to the neutral, so I was able to kind of manhandle it down. But yeah, the reverse is kind of dangerous. And I'm sure as we start to see more of these mowers out there, people are going to notice that, and they'll probably just send out an update to be able to address that.
Yeah, firmware updates. Jake was talking about it earlier. Isn't it great that our machines can just advance while we're sleeping? You know, they get firmware updates, so you get up tomorrow and there's, you know, an improvement of traction, steering, such with the zero turn. Jake, you guys, what have you guys seen as far as technology advances, any new equipment you guys are using?
That's a good question, Stephen. You know, we haven't really been getting too crazy this year. This year, we've really been just focusing on systems, processes, and profitability, and kind of poising more so for next year. So this is something that we're going to spend a lot of time in the off season. So off season in Colorado here is typically from about mid-December to mid-March. And so during that time, I don't, you know, really do much else. I do hunt a lot, but other than that,
yeah, I love it. Yeah, man.
Other than that, though, I that's my time to recover, one, and then two, kind of just like research and development. And so, upcoming off season, I see as being really busy, because of the development of where AI has come. Seeing how we can implement that. I mean, it's crazy what you can do with AI these days, as far as like writing blog posts. I was taking notes on my phone the other day. A lot of you guys use Open Phone, which I think is like a phone answering system.
It's an app that creates a secondary number on your phone. So it's like having two phones in your pocket, but all on one. So that's great for business. I'm a big fan, big proponent of that.
Nice.
Yeah. I use a version of that I think I use Google Voice though. Works similar.
Okay. Yeah. Same concept. Yeah, I really like the open phone app, the form, how it works.
And then one other one I made a note on was ClickUp. Who was it that says that they use ClickUp, the automation software, task manager? Was that Jamar?
Michael.
That's probably
Jamar. It was Abraham.
Oh,
Abraham and Michael. Quiet lawn.
You know, as like a, you know, solo entrepreneur, you know, owner, I think with technology these days, we can do so much as one individual. We can do the same as, you know, maybe what 10 people used to be able to do, or 5 or 10, you know, whatever that number is. And so I think really it's up to us to kind of optimize that. And you know, it's not only equipment, but software and processes and all that.
100%. Just like we're looking at the new technology on the mowers. I mean, looking to see how this the AI technology can help us out to streamline processes. The open phone, I just got an update about it. They are basically, for every phone call that we have with customers now, it will automatically generate notes for us, like follow-up notes about that conversation at the end of the call. So you know, I'm out on a mower all day, and I'm fielding multiple phone calls throughout the day. Like when I get home at my computer and I go to sit down, I'm like, ah, oh, crap, I forgot I talked to Sally and you know, whoever, and shoot, what were we talking about again? I can literally just open up that I can click on that call. And there's a text recap of what was discussed. And so I can go back and see what I need to do.
Like Spark
notes. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about, man. We've gone through all the hard work here. When the gassers get here, they're going to have everything they need. They're going to be like, what's hard about this? And we're going to be like, yeah, well, we'll tell you what was hard about it.
Paving the road.
Before you got here. We were doing this
back in my day.
I think it also comes down to making the choice to implement these type of things. I mean, gas or electric, you know,
the way that you choose to,
the way that you choose to operate your business. Like we're all using CRMs, and 10 years ago that wasn't a thing. So these companies, local companies that have been around for 10 plus years, you know, these people might still be, you know, hey, we'll leave an invoice in an envelope in your door.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, even just card on file, man, that was huge for us, for all of us.
Exactly.
Yes, it's, you put know, us so far ahead from the other guys.
It was a big deal.
Being able to just, you know, like Sean said, field these calls and then go home, log into your CRM, write an estimate or a quote up real quick. I mean, that's speed, and we all know speed kills. And you know, talking about AI, you know, we're using a Site Recon for property measurements, and we don't even have to be on site to measure out for mowing, aeration, lawn treatments. I mean, that's huge. That's massive. That's I mean, and I know that's not like particularly this year type of new. I mean, that's probably been around for 5, maybe even more years, but you know, the fact that we're doing it and we're taking advantage of that, it definitely sets us apart.
That's definitely worth mentioning though, because I mean, I didn't ever learn about it until you mentioned it, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, and I think that's a game changer for people that maybe are still going out on site to do on-site quotes, you know, estimates, stuff like that. I mean, think about all of the time and basically money that goes into doing an in-person quote.
Now I personally do like to meet up with the customer still, because you know, we're selling ourselves to sell the job.
I agree
with
that.
Sell our company.
I agree,
you know,
100%.
Always try to meet up with people, even if it's just a one-time thing, because I'm personally so passionate about what we're doing. about the way that we're doing things. You know, we're using the all electric equipment that's all green sourced energy. We're looking to restore the soil health. We're looking to restore the ecology. And people see that passion. And you're selling yourself. You know, you're selling your belief that what you're doing is so real and so important. And when people see that, you know, they're like, we don't even have to look anywhere else because, you know, that's what we want too. You know, that's why we called you. And I'm like, yes, this is it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, strange parallel for prior to getting into this business for almost 20 years, I was a physician recruiter and I used to recruit doctors into hospitals and I would sell our recruiting services to the hospitals, the hospital administrators, you know, et cetera. And I would always get that question asked to me over and over again. Hey, there's 25 different firms that we can work with. Why should I work with you? That was always a question that was asked of me whenever I would go meet with these hospital administrators. And I said, you know what? We're all fishing from the same pool. We're all calling the same doctors. We basically are the same as any other company that's out there. The only difference between us and them is me. You get to work with me. Whenever you choose to work with, you have all these companies to choose from that do basically this exact same thing that you do, Gerhardt. And the only thing that's different is you. You're the selling point. And I absolutely agree with you. And I know it's helpful to visualize and get quick specs on if you're going to do a sod install, what the measurements are to put together a quote, et cetera. If you have to get things out there really, really, really quick. But if you have the opportunity to get in front of the client and have a conversation with them, that increases the sale, obviously, as long as you believe in what it is you're selling, right?
If you add in that plus the availability to get those numbers quick, so that after you finish that conversation, you can go home and get to your office, and you're able to, you know, put those numbers into your numbers and you have an estimate like that. I mean, that's a recipe for success right there.
I would say we take a similar approach. I don't necessarily always go out on site. Actually, I rarely go on site for an initial quote, especially on mowing.
I'm sorry to interrupt here. Are you talking about specifically maintenance, or are you talking about landscaping related projects, or both?
So bigger projects, generally I will get out there, but I'm going to kind of screen the customer first. I'm going to look at their property. We're talking about site recon my county actually has a really great satellite imagery website that we can use for free. I'm still actually considering site recon though, just going back to the AI and automation, being able to speed up that process. We're considering that for next year, maybe worth the investment, but we can get all of the numbers and everything and we can see the contours of the property very accurately. They take all the pictures, at least once a year, usually in the wintertime, so there's less leaves. So 90 to 95% of our mowing quotes we can do just from online. And then even when it comes to like bigger projects, I can weed people out because I can get a pretty darn good idea of what their property looks like from that imagery. And I can at least give them kind of a ballpark and I can find out, are they just kicking tires? Are they talking to 20 different companies, or did they find out about us because of our branding and our marketing online, and they want to work with us and they're if we're aligned on similar beliefs and philosophies and things like that around how we do our work, then we can go out and have in person and really go into detail about the project.
Yeah.
And so it just, we got too many quotes coming in. It just helps us cut down on and weed people out and be more efficient with our time. We're trying to run a pretty lean business. And so it still allows us to continue to grow.
Yeah. Sandy. And Sean, I use something similar in my county. They do a really good job. And so the neighborhood that I'm currently in and dominating in right now is mostly new. And even then, like I can look up an address I can look up an address and immediately see the picture. Like as soon as that house closes, they'll go and take a picture or satellite picture, and I can see the, you know, the entire property back from a you know, I guess bird's eye view, and also from a street view. So to your point, I can see what's going on with the property, how many trees they have on there. And granted, since it's a newer community, you can also guess how many, you know, how many things you have to kind of work your way around, but it's a great place and it's public and it's free. So I guess at some point, if, you know, if I kind of went into a different area and I didn't have access to that same county website, I would consider something like that. But even, you know, technology that's out there, like what was that service that, or that gentleman that runs a service solution? I think it's called My Service Area. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So even that's pretty cool. Like, you know, if you're well established and you want to, you know, cut the good and the bad out, you know, you can have a plugin like that on your website where people can immediately put in their address and they'll know if you're in that area or not. So there's a lot of technology that can kind of help us weed a lot of the garbage out, or the things that are not in your service area, or the things you don't want to touch. So wanted to add that.
I will say that one of the biggest disadvantages of like a satellite mapping software, regardless of what it is, unless you're paying for a premium one, Hills. I mean, I will continue to harp on the Hills around here. I just went to look at a job today at a request, and I sent Sandy the photo. It was insane, the slope on this hill, and it's clearly not something that's mowed. And they weren't asking for mowing. It was something completely different. But like, I'm looking at it and it's just all weeds, and it is just a terrifying angle. It's nothing that even a gas machine would use. I mean, they must have a crew of people who string trim the entire thing. It was terrifying. But
they'll be able to knock that out with a robot mower soon. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, well, you never know. There's no human weight on that. So
my county's GIS website has contour lines and everything in there too. So we can actually see every 2 feet of elevation change.
Your heart just likes to spend money on
big dice.
Yeah. So that's kind of my question, Sean. My question is, so on our website, ecomo.com, we are full disclosure as far as pre-screening clients, if you will. Our prices are on our website. And there's some variability, obviously, but when you look at eighth acre, quarter acre, third acre, there's a price for your house. So when people come to our site and they put in an appointment request, generally we know they've already been to our site. They've looked at our pricing. They know how much we are. So there's not going to be a whole lot of room for negotiation. Very rarely do we use any satellite imagery unless we're preparing a quote for a sod installation, in which case we can do sod. As long as we have good aerial photographs, we can use the mapping software and calculate sod square footage for, you know, how many pallets we're going to need to get a job done. But we don't really use that for pricing out lawn mowing customers. Are you saying that when you get a request, you're going to this software and you're calculating square footage and you're establishing a price based on that?
Yeah, we just basically like very similar to how you could, if you go on to Google Earth, they've got measuring tools on there. You can calculate the square footage of a space.
Right.
This is essentially the same thing as that, but with much more recent photos. And then additional things like got contour lines. It's got, you know, ownership details of the properties. And so we measure it out so that we can, you know, if they've got sheds or garages offset from the house or anything like that, that we can measure the actual square footage of the grass itself, what we're going to be cutting.
And that's how you designate your price.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has a different price. There's not like some standard price. Like we've got, I would say, 200 clients that we charge $60 a week to.
Oh no,
I don't. Yeah. We don't charge any. there might be a couple of 55s in there, but we just kind of have a flat rate. And
we've got a minimum. So like actually, anybody, like, you know, every townhouse is the same rate. Now, if we've got multiple people in their same street, you know, they get density discount kind of thing. But for the most part, we've got like a minimum that we target. And then everybody else, though, anything above that, like anything over, I'd say 1,000 or 1,500 square feet is getting an individual price.
Uh-huh.
We do the same thing. We customize each price. Absolutely. Because, I mean, unless it's a new build community, there's a lot of variability between lawns. I will say, Sean, on the density discount thing, I mean, I don't know if you've thought about it or whatnot, but like, I personally would maybe like advise against something like that, because I've thought about that a lot, because it could be a good incentive to get people to sign on. But the problem with something like that is, one, density, building density is on you. You've done that you, and you should benefit from that. And number two, if people get used to that price, what happens if, say you have five people in that neighborhood and two or three of them drop off, all of a sudden you don't have the density. So then you shoot up that person's price. Just something to think about, but
it's, yeah, that's a good point. And it's probably more like a, it's probably more like a non-dense premium. So like it, we really target our marketing on the areas that we're already servicing. And so, you know, we're trying to build up those areas as much as possible, but obviously we get requests from all over the place. And so if it's a spot that we're not already, really, really focused on, their price is going to be higher. And we don't necessarily list like a line item discount on the invoices. It's just factored into the price that we give them based on drive time from the closest stop.
Nice. Good stuff.
So software, I feel like as much as we talk, we're all still using the same software we were using 2 years ago. And I guess the big question is, why are we still, is it because it's going to be a pain in the ass to make the switch to something else? Is it
switching's
cost?
A pain.
Are we waiting for something great to happen?
Waiting for winter.
I think, Jake, yeah, a lot of things, right? I think what Gerhardt just said, some of us, I think, are waiting for winter. I think a big part of it is we're waiting for proof of concept, right? What's the new one? Copilot, autopilot,
Copilot.
Yeah, that Mike Andy's is putting out. So, I mean, it's supposed to be really great and everything, but none of us know anybody that's like on it and is singing its praises 110% yet.
Yeah.
Because like, let's be honest, like, I mean, I've got like 350 people in my Yardbook CRM, like that have profiles, that have service history, that have billing history, everything. And to migrate all that over is a huge, huge task. Is it worth it? Yeah, absolutely. For the right CRM, that's going to make your life easier. That is going to make you that much more productive. Absolutely. But I think we're all kind of waiting, you know, similarly to some of this new electric lawn care stuff. We're waiting for that guinea pig to go first.
Yeah.
Let somebody work out the bugs first.
Yeah, you know, I went through the free version of Copilot, and it's impressive. I like the reports. It's definitely got a modernized look to it. I think we've been with Lawn Pro since the beginning, and since our very first customer, we've been with Lawn Pro. They've done a lot of great things for us. You know, we looked at LMN when Jamar and I were at Equip, and when most of us were at Equip last year, Jamar and I spent the better part of a day walking around talking to these software guys. I just couldn't find the right fit. And I think that's the reason why we've kind of been with Lawn Pro as long as we have. LMN is great for the landscaping because you guys know we do a lot of landscaping too. But they just don't fit the mold for the routine maintenance, the lawn care stuff. So, and Copilot might be that perfect mix of the two. It still lacks some of the landscaping oomph, if you will, that LMN has. But it's impressive, man. And I think we're going to make the change sooner rather than later. I don't even know that we're going to wait till winter, but I think we are going to go ahead and pull the trigger, migrate over to Copilot. It's pretty legit setup.
I'm definitely going to play around with that over the winter. I think you know, we're still in Jobber, and I love the interface for the most part. I think we talked about this in the past, and building quotes and the customer management piece of it is great. The reports are rough, and then as we're growing now too, as we're adding more routes, it's becoming increasingly difficult to schedule with the way their platform is set up. So, you know, we're definitely continuing to investigate in that area. Haven't pulled the trigger on anything yet. Copilot looks great, but like you said earlier, haven't really talked to anybody that's dove 100% into it and gotten their feedback. So that's something I'm looking forward to talking to people about at Expo.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know that, I mean, Jobber, obviously they got a lot of money. They've got a pretty powerful software. I mean, I don't think Lawn Pro has near the horsepower behind them or the cash that Jobber has behind them. So it's strange that, you know, the reports that we get with Lawn Pro, I mean, they're not great. Our best reports come from Stripe, obviously, because our Lawn Pro is linked through Stripe. But, you know, seeing Copilot with the capabilities that it has, Lawn Pro has that kind of, you were mentioning, it's become difficult for you guys to navigate with having more than one crew. I can tell you, Lawn Pro does that well, where when we have three crews that are running, we're able to segment these tasks out and everybody knows what they need to be doing, et cetera. And then you, as a kind of a master admin type person, can see all of the crews and everything that's going on. So they do that very well. You know who else does that very well is Service Autopilot. And we were on a demo with them. Now, they're a pretty advanced Service Autopilot. I mean, I think they're built for, you know, the bigger guys, the bigger fish, like the Bright Views of the world running on Service Autopilot. But I mean, that same capability that you're looking for, that's also in Copilot. You might look at Lawn Pro even if you, I mean, Copilot's obviously more expensive than Lawn Pro, but you might look at Lawn Pro.
So real quick, I mean, just like, I want to throw out the question of like, why do we spend so much time talking about like CRMs or like really any of this technology? I mean, we've kind of like mentioned it in passing a little bit, but like, why to you guys is it so important to have like a good CRM that fits your specific business, your style of how you guys operate?
Yeah. I want to jump in quickly and the route planning and route management. That's it. And that is the number one tool that we need as a company to continue to scale and make our business more efficient, effective, more profitable. We can do more in less time. Route planning, when you have three crews that are running, I mean, we've got, you know, two or three crews that are running. And if you can optimize those routes and you can make your everything just so much more efficient. And the issue is what I would like in a software that nobody seems to offer is I can plug in an entire month's worth of lawns that need to be cut, an entire month. And it can, and I can say, okay, I want to optimize this out for three crews and I want it to crunch it all up and go, okay, crew number one, for the next 30 days or 60 days or 90 days or whatever it is I designate, it's going to optimize that route for that crew, or it's going to plug them into a certain crew, and it's going to split them up by threes. So everybody can go, okay, you go here, you go there, and you do that. And it's just not out there. And it just blows my mind. Every time we ask people questions like Jamar and I did, I'm like, hey, so if I got three crews and I got 60 lawns and I want this thing to tell me how many crews I want to use three crews, who goes where? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. The way that we deal with that is we just set up recurring thing. We use Yardbook, by the way, which is, I think it's like $34 a month. We set up a recurring, service for the customer, and then that pops up, on jobs, say somebody is cut on Monday, that pops up way out, but I guess, yeah, I guess I see what you, I think we can automate we can do recurring routes as well.
But it does not, but your recurring routes are what you set up. They don't basically go, okay, sure, here's a new lawn, here's a new property, which day is the best day to do this lawn that makes it the most optimum to plug into this route. And you can use that for two reasons. You can use it when you're selling it. You can go, okay, here's the address. The optimum day is going to be on a Tuesday. So you're going to tell the client this, hey, we're going to service your property on Tuesday because that's when it fits our route.
Yeah, right? That's a good point. And I think we are going to see that more, Stephen, as AI starts to come more into this space and starts to learn that sort of thing. And we say it as if it's like far off into the future, but as we know, AI, happens in the blink of an eye. So I think it's not that far off potentially. I think Copilot or whatever it's called with Mike Andes, I think that's one thing he's kind of boasting is the AI integration and everything. Yeah,
I'm definitely excited to see what he does with that. He's certainly trying to stand out and showcase how his company can be different. And I think if he's willing to embrace that and really dive all in, it's going to be great. Honestly, that would be incredibly helpful. That's like it'll be a moonshot for what I'm looking for right now. Really, all I want is just being able to drag and drop people or, accounts from one route to another. I can move them from day to day, but I can't move them from route to route.
But that's it. That's just it. And that's my point. And I want to circle back on that. That's something that you need to have automated for you that says, because when you're doing it, you're just like, okay, this house is here and this house is there and this is in that neighborhood and da, 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 da. And this is the same exercise we went through as we continued to grow and, getting close to 300 now.
I can do that at 120 customers, but not 1,200.
Yeah. But once you have that many people, you need something to tell you this is the right day that this needs to happen. If this is going to be this designated crew and you've got two crews and you've got 16 lawns or 20 lawns or whatever have you, and it needs to be able to crunch that up and go, okay, these are the appointments. This is the optimum day. This is the optimum crew that it's going to be with. This is the number of people, lawns that they're going to have on this route. And it's just going to plug it in. And it's going to automatically do it for you. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. Need a full-time route.
And it just blows my mind.
I don't think you need a route manager.
You need a software application that can, there could easily be a software application that could be written by somebody that's a whole hell of a lot smarter than me and you and the rest of us here pretty quick that should be able to crunch that information and go, okay, Tuesday is the right day to do this lawn because you've got job crew over here on a Tuesday.
To Jake's point, I think the answer to that is going to be AI. AI is already doing that for other types of technologies, from planning someone's schedule out to being able to schedule certain things for them. I mean, recruitment softwares use technology like that. So I think the answer to that is going to be AI. The thing is the adoption. All right. How soon can someone actually put something together that's going to work, because the technology already exists. And I think that's hopefully what I think we're all hoping to see from someone like Copilot, right? That's boasting the AI and the integration. Is it going to take 3 years? I don't think so. I think they're probably testing that stuff out now. I mean, I think they may start small with, you know, simple question and answers type, but the technology exists. I mean, right now you can ask AI to do that for you if you pay for it, like from your smartphone.
Right.
So it's definitely coming, and it's going to come soon.
Built into
but to your
CRM.
Point is who's going to do it first?
Well, I
right
mean,
now, right now, Jobber can't even figure out what. Right now, Jobber can't even figure out what a road is, right?
Oh, well, LawnPro does have that. LawnPro has route optimization, but they only have it for the day. So you can basically go.
Jobber doesn't even do it like that. I feel the same pain, and I don't even have that many clients like you do, Sean. And I encounter some of the same issues. Like, it's easy to move from one day to the next, but the minute you try to group them together, I have to do it all in my mind. And at some point, you know, I'm not going to be in the truck every time. So how am I, you know what I'm saying? Like, no. I need to be able to make it easy. And going back to your point, Steve.
And our routes get optimized every morning. So we usually optimize a week before, but stuff gets moved around. And then every single morning, the routes get optimized, and then they'll get sent to the guys. Okay.
Here on that schedule.
Correct. And all the tasks get split up for the different people and, you know, all the crap they got to do. But it only does it for the day. And I'm like, why can't I choose a whole month? You know what I'm saying? Just let me select a date range and optimize 30 days for me.
It should be recurring. Just go ahead and plug it in and go.
I mean, we're losing so much money because we're manually going, oh yeah, we're in this neighborhood on Friday. And then things change and you start getting more density in one area, right? So you're really dense in one area on a Friday, maybe with one crew. And then you get really busy in another area. And then all of a sudden the new area takes over the old area, and the people that were Friday can't be Friday anymore. You know, so you got to move people around and stuff. And how great would it be if the software just did all this for you?
Yeah. And I'm going to have a similar problem to that now too. So with here in Florida, like, we don't technically stop. We do about 41 or 42 services throughout the entire year. So something that I figured out last year is that I had a hard time, and I had to manually change everyone from weekly visits to bi-weekly visits to once a month. And I wish that I can simply say, hey, this client is going to be set up for 42 services for the whole year. And that the system would be smart enough to know, is like, well, hey, the growing season, or I could even select, is like, hey, from this month to this month, it's going to be weekly. And then for the months, you know, but it doesn't let me do that. So I had to go last year and change every single one. And then it throws off all your reports because my income doesn't change. I'm still charging them the same thing every month for all 12 months. But the minute I make that change, it throws off all the numbers. So then it makes it seem like I'm making way less. So now that's not accurate. And I mean, for me, it's the CRM is the only tool I have to kind of, outside of Stripe, to be able to kind of have a quick glance at the investments or the money that's coming in. So I just have to, you know, it just kind of, to your point, there's a lot of things that these tools should be doing and they're not doing it. And they're very simple things. At least in my opinion, they're very simple things. And to Sean's point, with the amount of money and investment that a company like Jobber has, you would think that we would already be there. But it's just one of those things.
I don't think A-Rod took all their money. So they should still have a little bit left for building out the software.
Yeah. Shit, he should have done that shit for free.
Not to totally change the subject here, but I am going to totally change the subject here. Because I think...
Good old Jake fashion, huh?
Let's get back to some equipment. I mean, like, that's the boring stuff, right? The software, the processes. It's probably the most important as far as a profitability standpoint. But from the customer's perspective, the equipment that we use and the quality of the equipment and the end product is the most important. So, Steven, what's new with you guys as far as equipment, technology, all that good stuff?
Yeah, we've had a lot of changes. We've been doing some shopping around, talking to other companies that are out there, and we started working with Steel about 3 months ago. We were able to take on some demo equipment that these guys had for us, and they wanted us to check it out. And we have just been over the moon since we got it. Now, granted, like I said, it's only been a couple few months for us, but compared to what we were using before, it's definitely more durable. We beat this stuff up, man. I mean, we do. You know, we've got a couple crews that are, you know, doing a bunch of lawns and tearing this equipment up. And it's been a struggle for us in the past with just stuff failing and having to have that stress and worry about, you know, what's going to break today? What am I going to get a phone call about that's not working? And we've been pleasantly surprised with our experience working with the guys at Steel. And it's not perfect. I don't know that there is anything perfect for us. I mean, you guys know we've been around the block for a while now. So we've had a chance to get our hands on a lot of different stuff, and we've been pleased, man. So we built out a rig with all Steel gear, and we'll be building out another rig with probably another round of more Steel stuff.
So I'm familiar with Steel because of their chainsaws. I think that's, can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I'm familiar with their chainsaws. That's how I think they're kind of made their claim to fame. But they make lawn care equipment now, or do they offer everything from trimmers to mowers? Like, I'm honestly not familiar.
They've got it all. We've been running their power heads with a variety of attachments, and could not be happier with them.
Gonna say from the gas powered side, they make one of the best string trimmers in the market.
Yeah,
what is that? The nine? What is it? The I don't even know what the gas one is, but the 92R
FSA maybe FSA.
Yeah, they make one of the best ones in the market. Period.
Yeah, we bought the 135
chainsaws. Yeah, is that the gas 130... one, or is that the?
We've got the electric power head, the 135. It's like 135R or something like that.
Yep.
It's got a bunch of attachments. We use the string trimmers. We actually we modified them a little bit. We put the Edgit Pro on there, so it works great for edging and string trimming. We've also been playing around with their bed redefiner. They've got, I don't even know what, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like two discs on top of each other. It's like scissor blades almost. So I know a lot of golf courses use them for string trimming edges, because it doesn't throw the clippings. It just basically, it's like taking a pair of scissors and just cutting right along the edge. Those are a little slower than like your traditional string trimmer for most trimming jobs. But we've found some really unique use cases for those that have made like cleanup jobs just so much faster. So we've just kind of found a lot of different ways to use some of their equipment. Maybe not 100% the way it was intended, but it's holding up to, I mean, we're putting them through hell and they're holding up. It's been great.
We just picked up the stick edger today, as a matter of fact, the curved stick edger, which has got the 135 head on it. And man, it's awesome. Like mega, mega power. I mean, you could totally use it as a redefiner. It's like beast mode.
Batteries are great,
you know what,
too.
Jake, I want to circle back on that real quick too, you know, with them and all the tools that they have. I mean, they've got it all. They do not have a zero turn yet. But you know, they've got the mowers. I think they've got a little bit more work to do on the mowers, and they know that too. We've got the 510, and we've got a demo of the 765V, which is the 25-inch mower. But the 510V, it's a great mower. It's got great self-propel in it. The action is good with it. It does lack a little bit with power and cut, but there's definitely a lot of capability there. I know they're going to be building off of it. The hand tools are just, they're just incredible, all of them. And it's just like you said, with a steel chainsaw, their electric chainsaws, the battery powered chainsaws, we've got one. We've got the, I think it's called the HS200 or RM200 or whatever it's called. It's like a 12 or a 14 inch blade. Thing is incredible. And every single hand tool that we have, you know, the blowers are great. They've got that. We have the big backpack blower and the AR3000 battery, which is kind of heavy. But during leaf season, it's going to be incredibly handy. The unit is just super powerful.
What do you think about the volume on their string, on their blowers?
I love it. You know, and I've done some comparisons because obviously we've been ego guys for a long, long time. And I've put the 650 hand. We like the handheld tools, man. I mean, when the landscaping guys usually take the big, heavy stuff, and the guys that are out cutting grass will take the more convenient handheld stuff, like the little handheld blowers that they have, which are absolutely perfect for, you know, trimming and edging a driveway and a sidewalk at somebody's house, and you're just quick in and out. You know, those things are, they're great. The coolest thing about them is they're incredibly quiet. The comparatively on the, you know, Ego calls it CFMs, and steel is Newton force or whatever the heck it is it's called. And when you put the 650 Ego, which is the traditional handheld one, up against the BGA 20, I think it is, or the BGA 200 handheld blower, they're virtually identical. The only difference is the Ego one is significantly louder, and the steel one is significantly quieter. It is unbelievable how they have designed this tool to where, I mean, it's virtually just in your ear listening to it. You're like, my God, this tool is half as loud as the Ego 650, just from the pitch, right? They've done something in their tools to adjust the pitch to where it doesn't have that kind of piercing effect on your ear. Jake, you know what I'm talking about.
It's like a low hum.
Yeah, absolutely. I know what you're talking about. My dog just joined me here in the room here in case you hear some ruckus. But yeah, man, I've got a few Ego blowers that I'm like thinking, man, I should be wearing
ear protection.
Hearing protection. Yeah, because it's so high pitch. And I'm like, not that it's
crazy loud, but out of the box, but they definitely over time, after like 6 months or so,
something happens with the baffles or whatever it is in there, the sound dampening, and that pitch changes and can't be great.
Yeah, I've experienced that newer sound technology or the dampening that you've experienced, Steve, with the Crest tool. For a tool that is as powerful as that blower, it is quiet. And even
I've heard that too.
Even their string trimmer and their edgers, compared to the Greenwork stuff, is super quiet. Like you could barely hear these things actually moving, which is pretty surprising. But I think the quietness to the blower has to do something with some sort of cone technology that they added to these new blowers now. Yep. Because it's not just Steel or Crest. I think the other folks are doing it too, like Makita and Husqvarna does the same thing, where they added some sort of cone technology where it reduces the high pitch sound, or even just a sound in general, with foam and a bunch of other stuff that they added to it. So I think the blowers are definitely progressing. And it's funny because a few years ago when we were talking about blowers, we were complaining for the most part about leaf season and how, you know, we didn't have enough power, we didn't have enough this. And now the blowers are there. You know, it's just battery management at this point. But I've been using the Crest tools, as you guys know, for some time now, and I am using their newer stuff now. But it's a little heavier than I expected. Not something that if you would give me a choice, not something that I would personally go out and equip. I think I would probably choose something a little lighter compared to what's out there now. So how does that compare? And Steve, this is your question for you. So how does the weight of the tool compare to your Eagle tools? Because I know Eagle tools are pretty light as it is.
I mean, I'd say they're pretty close to being the same. The steel slightly batteries are heavier, a little bit lighter.
Close.
Yeah, the power heads on the steel machines are definitely heavier. It's only a matter of time before they do come out with something that's smaller. But yeah, that 135 head, they use it on pretty much everything, and it's definitely bigger. It's got a different balance to it, right? And but they do have compensation with their AP500 and the AP300 batteries. Those AP500 batteries are, you know, roughly, I think, nine amp batteries. And they, you know, an Ego 10 amp battery is about twice the size. So they do make up for it in weight with that flat pack technology and that AP500 battery.
That's pretty cool. They're weights, 300 and their 500s are the exact same size battery.
They're just different battery types, right? The AP300's got the round cell batteries in it, the 18650 batteries, and the AP500's have the flat pack technology. So the AP300 is actually cools quicker. Which is particularly of interest here in Texas because it's been 108 degrees. We've been using a lot of the AP300s because they do need to cool before they will start charging again. And the AP300s cool faster than the 500s do. The 500s, we've had some issues with having to bring them home and put them in an AC environment for 20 minutes before they'll even start charging again.
I'm with you there. It's interesting though that I don't know how exactly it works, but the 500s, I've never had an issue with the performance of the battery. When it's in the tool, it runs fine. I get seemingly full runtime out of it. It matches up with expectations of what their marketing says. But like you said, they do need to cool down before you can charge them. We ran into an issue today. We were out on a property. Luckily, we had both. We had the 300s and 500s with us. But we were trying to charge while we were out there, and the 500s just wouldn't do it. We were full sunlight. No reprieve from the heat, and they were just kind of stuck. But the 300s charged up no problem.
Yep.
That's the one thing I can say about the Crest tools though, with that CyberTank technology, is that so as you guys know, I run the ramp rack, so everything's exposed, including the CyberTank, which is loaded on the back of the truck and it's exposed. I mean, I put a grill cover on it, you know, overnight just to kind of keep some stuff off of it, but when I'm out there running it, I leave it exposed, and this thing is hot to the touch. Sometimes I can't even turn it on because the surface is so hot. But I, you know, the minute I turn that thing on and I'm charging and dumping batteries on and replacing batteries, there's no stop. There's no slowing down. It cools the battery down almost immediately and it charges it within minutes. So
yes,
that's the one thing too, that technology awesome. Is just insane. I just wish the handheld tools were a little lighter because, you know, I'm out here running these tools with 2.5 amp hour batteries, because if I run it with a dedicated five, like my hands get fatigued, and I'm not sure if I'm a big wuss or whatever the case is, but this is, it's noticeably heavy. I don't know how else to explain it. For some reason the shaft is solid steel, which is not necessary because I'm not here, you know, trying to string trim at a train crossing. You know, I might lose the tool and the train's going to run it over or something. Like I'm just string trimming. Like I don't need solid steel shaft. I mean, I'm not throwing it in the back of the truck. It's on a rack, you know. I'm not worried if it breaks. You know, I'd rather be lighter and more efficient and less fatigued while I'm using it. So, you know, stick edger, I don't mind if it's heavy because I'm rolling on the floor anyway, right? That doesn't matter. But the string trimmer, to be that heavy, I think it's unnecessary. But again, I think they're trying to overbuild things because they say, hey, landscapers break stuff all the time.
This is what the people want.
Yeah, but do they really want that? Well,
yeah,
they don't.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, nobody wants
until you build it. And everybody, yeah, until you build right. it, and everybody's like, "Wait a second, we didn't want that." And you go, "Oh, you said you wanted something more durable." Well, yeah, but I didn't
exactly. Need it. And I think that's what's happening. I think it's yeah. People say, "Hey, we want durable things because it breaks," and then they do build it, and they're like, "Man, but this shit's heavy as hell." And that's the trade off, unfortunately. Yeah. You know.
So real quick,
the proper way to say it is you want your cake and you want to eat it too.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or they're like, oh, electric company, you know, we get a reputation, we're wussies, so we're going to overcompensate and make our tools out of steel.
So, yeah.
I mean, I'm
trying to get the Lakeland boys to use it so they can see I'm not a wuss. I'm like, dude, this shit's heavy as hell. Someone else has to see what I'm seeing. Cause
yeah, you know, but Ronnie's young. Ronnie's young.
Yeah. Man.
He's full of Ronnie's piss and young. Vinegar. Sandy,
up and puts it down.
I was going to ask Sandy, has Crest kind of come out with what that technology is yet? That allows their batteries to cool and charge so fast and all that stuff.
No, I mean, the only thing they've made public is that it is AC to AC charging. So right, AC to AC, yeah. So it makes it so that's what DC makes it charge DC. Like super fast. AC to DC, DC, yeah. So it makes it charge like super fast.
No, just DC to DC.
I mean, I'm still super impressed with the way that works and how it functions. You know, and like I said, I'm telling you, man, I leave this thing out in the heat where real feels like 100+ degrees, and I throw a battery on there. You could hear the cooling fans going, and 2 minutes later, the battery's charged. It hasn't failed yet. I have noticed though that on the really, really hot days that the actual battery, the tank itself, it degrades a lot faster. So on days where I know it's light and I know I should come back with almost a full tank, I just drain it really fast. I've given up using the 12 amp hour batteries. I did at first with the backpack blower, but that shit's just way too heavy. So I just throw the 5 amp hours on that and I'm just charging it literally because it dies pretty quick on that blower. So I'm just charging it almost every property. I just throw it on the charger, get another one and keep going. But I abuse the shit out of the cyber tank. So it still functions and it hasn't failed. It is connected too. So the app does tell me when it has errors and stuff like that. And I haven't gotten one overheating error yet. So
that's pretty good.
I want to jump in real quick. I know we're trying to wrap up, but I'm curious, Steven, about the steel batteries. Sandy mentioned the AC versus DC. And so, in our dedicated mowing setups this year, we built our own battery chargers for each brand that we're taking out, and we're doing DC to DC charging. And, you know, we do have one trailer route that we are still running with the Mean Green mower that we're plugging in commercial chargers into inverters and doing AC charging. That's the one that I've been on the most, but it just dawned on me that my guys haven't had a single issue charging steel batteries on the AC setups. And so I'm curious, I don't know if you know, maybe it's just cooler because it's less stuff going on in the cars than versus a trailer with more equipment in there. I wonder if the limiter that is stopping the batteries from charging is in the charger itself or if it's technology in the battery. I'm gonna have to pay with more steel, attention to that, do a little more research. Yeah,
well, with steel it's in the battery, so there's a temperature sensor like a battery management system that's inside the battery, and if the ambient temperature is beyond a certain threshold, the battery will not charge. It won't do anything until it gets to the required ambient temperature range. So I'm more intrigued
because
about
of the setup itself, because we've got AC in the cars obviously and not in the trailer, very little ventilation in the trailer. So
well I mean DC to DC is the way to go. I mean, we all know that that is the fastest way to charge. It's the most efficient way to charge. If you can just go, because that's what Sandy has. That's what the tank is that's DC to DC. So there's no AC power involved. So that's where you get the fast charging. You know, Jake, that's where the technology is on the DC to DC side. And looking into the future, it's funny because I was going to ask you this question earlier, Jake, about where you saw our business and our technology in 5 years' time from now. I do want to get your thoughts on that, but jumping ahead, I think that that is what we're going to be seeing more of in the very near future, is this DC charging systems without the use of the inverter. Jake, where do you think we're going to be in 5 years from now?
Man, I've got a lot of crazy thoughts around this, because I think the rate at which like our technology is advancing is exponential. And so as we talked about a little bit earlier, what one person or very few people are going to be able to do is going to become exponentially more. And so I honestly see that, you know, like right now our industry is saturated with the, you know, Chuck in the truck and all these other little people, you know, that have anywhere from 5 to 50 lawns, right? Because of the advance in technology and in efficiency, I think that we're going to see a lot of, I guess, what am I trying to say? Basically, a lot. There's going to be fewer companies servicing more people. So
consolidation.
Consolidation, exactly. Thank you. I'm with Gerhardt, and I know Michael from Quiet Lawn is kind of on this train too. I think in the next 5 to 10 years, I think most of the actual mowing is going to be done by robots. I think that so we're going to see a big disconnect between, you know, the early adopters. And that's what's going to allow the early adopters are going to be able to service more people, more customers with less actual humans. And then we're going to have the resistors, right? So we're going to have the gassers that, you know, they didn't even want to move to electric battery operated equipment. And now not only are they left behind on that, but they're left behind. We're beyond battery operated. We're mowing with robots, you know, that are guided by satellites, you know, that don't need guide wires. And there's even some robots that are in the works right now that actually do trimming as well. You know what I mean? So like, this might be a little more than you asked for when you asked this question, but yeah. I think it's going to be pretty wild within the next 5 to 10 years where our industry, where we go.
So specifically 5 years down the road, are we going to have the string trimming mowing robots? Do you see those in 5 years, or are we still, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think there'll be basically, one person will go out, they'll drop these robots off at the variety of properties. You know, they might still be pulling a trailer and they offload a robot, come back in 20, 30 minutes, pick the robot up.
Pick it up.
They might do some specialty tasks such as, okay, removing any large branches from the property that may have fallen, you know, do a quick walk around. I'm not sure how they'll approach edging, but I mean, because that's not being talked about right now as far as like edging sidewalks and driveways and stuff like that. But, you know, again, at the pace that technology is advancing, I wouldn't put it past, you know, these robots to be able to do that. And I guess, you know, inherently then the question is this a negative thing? I personally don't see it as negative. You know, I think we have to be careful about at which the pace that technology displaces jobs. But this goes into a whole nother story of,
sure,
you know,
That's going to create a lot of
economics.
It's going to create a lot of other avenues as well. I mean, we're going to have to be able to maintenance that equipment.
I'm going to have to change those blades.
That's right.
That's so that is one thing about these mowers is that they have much much thinner blades because you want less resistance. So it doesn't use as much battery and they can spin faster, but they lose the edge much faster as well. And yep. So that's when people I talked to that own these robots already. That's definitely been an issue is swapping out the blades that they thought that you just forget about it.
I mean, at the end of the day, the machine just pulls into the little house that it lives in, and there's a sharpener that's in there that just sharpens the blades overnight. I mean, come on.
Just does a little spin right on the sharpening block. I mean, I want them to drop fertilizer and supplements too.
Yeah.
Sandy, that's easy.
There's a drone that sprays it, now. That
it's got a little bucket. You fill it in and it sprinkles it while it goes.
What do you think, Sandy? 5 years from now, where are we going
to
be?
Not even 5 years. I mean, shit. The going back to bringing Cress back to the conversation. Cress is offering robots that don't need any guide wires or boundaries.
Sure.
You plot it once and set it and forget it. And the technology is out there. It exists. I mean, people are going to do it. I mean, their future or their vision of commercial landscapers is that you're going to show up to a property with a zero turn meant for the properties that you service. If it's the first time you're going to mow this property, you plot it out the same way you do with their RTKs or their robot mowers. And the minute it's plotted out, you hit go and the mower gets off the trailer, drops its deck and starts to work while you string trim. I mean, that's what even Greenzy is essentially offering now. It's, boundaryless mowing technology where they have the mower do a perimeter around what it's going to, mow. And then as that's mowing, someone else is string trimming or maintaining a garden. So that stuff is going to happen a lot sooner. I mean, like I said, Greenzy alone is testing that out right now. And they have clients who are doing that right now, mowing big fields while they, handle the trimming or, around these commercial properties. So that's not even 5 years away. That's like now that they're doing that now.
Mm-hmm.
I take is adaptability.
Yeah.
Say that, Sean? Again.
Well, RTK technology. Yeah,
I think it's definitely coming. That's the way we're building our company. That's what we're focused like building towards. I do think it's a little bit further out for as far as like an all-in-one solution,
like residential. Yeah, there's a big deviation for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think commercial. You've got big open spaces, fields, and things like that. We can get robots in. There are robots that can do that today. It's no problem. But for residential properties, these smaller properties, there's so many different nuances. I mean, if you look at self-driving cars, right? Like, obviously, there's a lot more that goes into that with pedestrians crossing the streets in front of them and things like that. But they've been 1 year away for like 15 years now. It feels really close, but I do think it's a little bit further off to have a robot mower that's going to string trim your fences and everything too. I think pretty confidently within 5 years, all of our mowing will be done by robots. But I do think it to really be able to handle all situations. There's so many different, little ditches and hills and things like that. I do think it's going to be about 5 years before the robot mowers really fully take that over. String trimming included with that, I'd say within the next 8 to 10 years. But that's a whole nother animal. I mean, that's much more targeted areas. It's a little more difficult for the technology to go around and plan for, and it's a little more dangerous too. You've got you mowing, you can just put the mower down, right? If everything is contained underneath the deck of that mower, you don't have too many issues with things flying out. But when you start putting a string trimmer on a robot, and how's it get, it needs to differentiate between grass, gravel, little tiny rocks in the grass that somebody kicked in. There's a lot of little nuances that are going to need to be worked out. And I don't know if our industry is big enough to demand the research dollars into the AI that are going to go in there first. Right. I think we're going to be kind of secondary, adaptations to that technology. It's coming, but I think full automation is still a little ways off.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, there's nothing worse than getting a phone call from your client that the robot broke another window and it was string trimming, and it keeps happening like weekly, like 10 calls a week. Hey, you guys broke a window, and you're like, damn robot.
I just got a bill for a window. Those are not cheap. You're going to have to raise prices if that's the case.
Yeah, we didn't either.
I just envisioned like the robot mower going through Mrs. Susie's like daisies, like thinking it was a grass field or something. Like, yeah.
When it's backed by AI and it's like, oh, you didn't change my blades this week? Oh, I got you. Let me run over these daisies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Dave, don't do that, Dave. Sean?
I got a buddy that just took a trip over to Germany, and at least in the town that he was in, they're like kind of, it's more rural area in like Western Germany. But the town that he was in, all of the lawns are like, everything's relatively flat. It's all like fairly cookie cutter properties. It's like very straight lines. It might not be square necessarily. It might get different angles, but it's very straight lines for the property lines. And almost everyone there had robot mowers, but he was sending me pictures of all these robot mowers in the yards. And it was just funny because every one of the pictures, the lawns look perfect except for any obstacles. Like if there's a tree, there's like 3 feet of grass growing around it.
Yeah. I mean, look at it. Look at even Chris. They're bringing their technology from their Europe based, it's so different. It's a different dynamic overseas and how they do things. They've adopted robot mowing for years now, I think, even before we even thought of it as a thing here. They've been doing it for a very long time. But hey, again, being resilient and adaptable is always a thing any good business person or person in general should have in their wheelhouse. Things are going to change, you know, either you move with it, you adapt to it, or you get left behind. And you'd be like those crazy old people that, you know, are like, back in my day.
Hey, Sandy, that's a perfect transition for the question that I had for Steven, because not to put you on blast here, Steven, but you're like one of the older,
ancient?
You know, not at all. He's young at heart. Yeah.
Grandpa Steve.
But no, you're one of the older guys.
Yo, sorry, yes.
Also, thank you. Also, therefore,
I'm sorry, Steven. I'm sorry. I saw an opening up. Look at
one of the most wise, right?
More wise, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. But with that, I mean, most of your generation, I will say most, because like a lot of people, they just, and I even catch myself sometimes, like, you know, being resistant to, you know, say getting on TikTok or Twitter or whatever it is, but like, whatever it is, you are like on it. Like immediately, as soon as something comes out, you're like on it. You like know everything about it. If you don't mind just like speaking to that. And cause I do think that's like such a great attitude to have. And like, also like, I think kind of creates a lot of success for you probably in life and in your business. So if you don't mind just kind of speaking to that.
Wow. that's deep. Yes. First of all, I am old. Actually, I'll be 50 in November. And yeah, to your point, I mean, I grew up in an age where we were predominantly gas powered, and that's all we ever knew. An interesting thing that I would bring up here is our industry is also, you know, particularly in our area here in Dallas, I would say that most of the companies that are running around here are probably about my same age. You know, they've been doing it. They might be in their 40s or whatever. They've been doing it for a long time. There's some young guys that come into the game, but most of them are kind of already in their 40s and they've been doing it for a long, long time. And I think one of the things that's what intrigued me the most about when we started this business was doing all electric is, okay, I'm a good sales guy. I've always been in sales my entire life. That's what I've done. And it's a very transitional skill, right? So as long as I believe in what it is I'm selling, I can sell it, you know? And when we got into this business, I was like, I want to do something, but I want to do something different than what, you know, the masses are doing. And that's ultimately what led us to starting an electric lawn care business. Was there's a demand for a service, but I want to do something different than what everybody else is doing. And I wholeheartedly believed in it whenever we started it. And I wholeheartedly believe in it now. And it's an easy sell for me because what we're doing is, I mean, it's cool stuff. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And it's not hard to convince somebody else how cool it is too. You know, this is a pretty easy product that we have to sell, guys. I mean, our product is our service, but we're selling something to somebody that somebody wants, right? They want something different. They want change. They want, you know, less noise pollution. I mean, it's just like, you're just feeding candy to the baby type situation. And, you know, I think to circle back on, you know, our passion, Jake, is ultimately the reason why we've had the level of success that we've had. I mean, it ultimately comes down to that. Customer service is great. Could we improve some things? Absolutely. Do we know that what we're doing is providing a greater benefit to our clients than traditional lawn care companies? Absolutely. Is that hard to sell to somebody? No, it's not. You know? So,
yeah.
You know, we're doing the same service. You know, we're friends with all the gas powered guys that are out there and we all talk to each other and, you know, we see each other out there all day long, but at the end of the day,
you get along with the gas guys in your city.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, they got mouths to feed too, right? You know, I mean,
they just drive by and scream at me. Well,
no,
cutting.
That ain't out. Well, then you got, yeah, you might need something.
I don't know what I did to them.
Yeah. Look, man, at the end of the day, everybody's just out there, you know, busting their butts, earning a living to feed their families. And, you know, if the gassers, that's their means to feed their families until they adopt to electric, then that's what it is. And you got to respect that. That's a human right, you know, that everybody deserves and the opportunity to feed their families and stuff. And I mean, like I said earlier, you know, and this kind of circles back around to, you know, where we started this whole conversation. You know, we've come so far in such a short period of time. It's going to be great, man. Whenever everyone else has the opportunity to, you know, to use this equipment that we've been using and, you know, and be successful. That's what I want for everybody else that's out there. And you know, I know I've got people on my back. I know I've got companies that I need to outrun. I know we've got to build our business faster than anybody else's, so we have the biggest footprint in the business. Jake, I know this, you know, and you guys know this too. There is competition out there. If, you know, we have to compete. But you know, staying out in front of everybody else is ultimately what's most important. But also, you know, pulling for the success of everybody else that's out there too, because, you know, there's going to come a day when here in Dallas, I think it's like 2030, they have to have the full transition over to battery power. So, you know, there's a hard deadline on when everybody needs to make that transition here. So, you know, these guys are going to feel it sooner or later. It's a fun business, Jake, man. You know, I love this stuff and that's the reason why we're successful.
Hey, and isn't that one of the biggest reasons why we all got together to do what we're doing right now?
Absolutely, right?
And
to man.
Educate and let everyone know that, hey, as scary or daunting as the process may be, or, you know, we've all gone through that. Ask questions. You know, this is to your point that you made earlier. I mean, everyone, there's plenty of work for everyone. I mean, even if you took your area, there's no way that the competitor next door to you is going to be able to take over that, you know, they'll have to have so many employees or whatever. So there's enough for everyone to be able to kind of take a slice of that pie.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we're here to educate, right? And show those folks who may not be using electric, and, you know, whoever wants to experience what we're experiencing now, we're here to educate and really show them that it's possible. And for those who are already in it, maybe provide them some insights on what we're doing better that can help them become more efficient in their task, or, you know, maybe recommend better tools than what they're using.
Or let them know where we already screwed up so they can avoid it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the most thing is like, hey, this is where we messed up. Or this is, you know, why Steven is the golden child out of us all, you know?
No. Wait. I thought that was William.
That's definitely William.
Don't forget about William. Yeah.
That's definitely William. He's doing big things over at Sust, man. Is he going to have a booth? Yeah. Are they going to have a booth at Expo?
I think so.
I think they're sponsoring Expo. I think they're the main sponsor.
Look, this is the official. This is going to be the official creation of the Electric Lawn Talk companies to watch. Sust on the top of that list.
There you go.
For sure.
Yep. Keep an eye out.
Yeah,
we'll probably have to get some guys cool doing it. We might have to get some sponsor dollars from the Sust guys.
Right? I was going to say,
All right. Well, Sean, Jake, Sandy, Gerhardt left us already. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, man,
we'll see everybody next time.
You all have a good night.
Remember, always be charging.
Thanks for listening to Electric Lawn Talk. Don't miss the next episode. Be sure to subscribe. And while you're at it, help spread the word by leaving a rating and review.